Common Science with Jeff Danner of the Common Science blog on our website, chapelboro.com. It updates every Sunday. He joins us every Monday to talk about it. And this week's column is about birth practices.
It is. It's a two-part series, and this one's called Birth Practices 1940 to 2040 for the United States.
All right.
And I'll tell you a little bit about why I picked that time frame. But I really enjoyed, I enjoyed writing all the columns, but I particularly enjoyed this column because it's a column that I think the science involved in and of itself is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, what's really fascinating about this story is what it tells us about sort of the development of our culture over the last, well, let me get to quick math, 76 years.
Yes.
I got that right.
Yep.
And just how things developed and how that's reflected in this column, birth practices. This is about having birth either at home or in the mm-hmm. hospital, if in the hospital, how that happens.
Yeah.
How things developed and what that tells us about ourselves.
And it's really amazing how rapidly things do actually change. Well, we have a tendency to think like, oh man, nothing ever changes. Everything's exactly the way that it was. We go from one day to another. And then you look back at the way things were 10 years ago, let alone 75. And it's just incredible.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that strikes me. And when the opportunity presents itself, I try to bring in some personal details. So mm-hmm. I did that in this story. So the reason I picked 1940 was that in 1940, in a little house with a dirt floor in Green Bank, Pennsylvania, my mother was born.
Yes.
And I'll pause for a moment. Through the miracle of the internet, she's listening. So, hi, Mom.
Hi, Mom.
And if we think about 1940, you know, I mean, the U.S. is starting to maybe come out of the Great Depression at that point.
Kind of,
it really
yeah.
hasn't kicked in. The economic
right.
development doesn't really happen until World War II, which mm-hmm. is, of course, filled with all sorts of irony and interest.
But
in 1940, I'm being born at home, like my mother was, without the assistance of any trained medical professionals, was the norm in the United States. And it just feels like it should have been longer ago.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really just when my mom was born, when her sister was born, my aunt, that was a very common circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
And so then World War II comes along, and it changes the United States in very dramatic ways. I mean, I think people are familiar with the economic development that came through or was, as we industrialized to make planes and tanks. And,
right.
And there was great economic prosperity, but also the United States didn't have any damage during the war other than the loss of soldiers. And so we come out of World War II, and a couple of really interesting things happen. We have lots of money.
Mm-hmm.
There's this impression and this theme that I think runs through the 50s all the way up to the Vietnam War that part of our success in World War II was very science-driven.
Yes.
We had these brand-new planes. We mm-hmm. we created the atomic bomb. But there were also tremendous advances in medicine.
Yeah.
Both in just sanitation, in the use of antibiotics. Something that I'm thinking about writing an entire column on someday is the discovery that giving people blood plasma instead of whole blood when they're injured was discovered during World War II, and that
right.
still helps people. It's a more effective way of keeping someone from bleeding to death, which was became popular during the war. And so, we get into the 1950s in the United States, and to me, I don't know about you, I have this sort of this Norman Rockwell version of the 1950s, and I'm sure there were more subtlety, but there are some themes that I think are relevant.
Right.
And so, the United States builds a tremendous number of hospitals. With all this money flowing in, and we have this influx of medical professionals. We need to staff these buildings, but we have all these doctors and nurses who served during World War II. And then further, even people who were in the war, veterans, they come back. Maybe they weren't a doctor, but they go in the GI Bill. This is a great growth, and so people are trained. So all of a sudden, we have this tremendous transformation. So you get into the 1960s, and now almost all babies are born in hospitals. But they're born in hospitals that have this sort of the same feeling that technology is dominating over Mother Nature, and we're going to put all of these problems of the past behind us. And in particular, birth becomes this, what I say in the column, is this very highly medicalized version.
Right.
Or medicalized procedure.
Yes.
So now we sort of flash forward, I'm going to talk about Mom again.
Hi, Mom.
Yeah. So she has my sister in 1964. And to me, I think 1964 might be the peak of the medicalization of birth.
Okay.
in that it's very common at this time when women come in to give birth that not only, you know, this is before, just getting spinal anesthesia. I can't think of the word.
Yes, that.
Because there are no women in the studio.
Right.
It'll come to me in a moment.
Yes.
So my mother gets general anesthesia.
Mm-hmm.
So again, treating birth as this sort of this illness, this medical procedure.
Right.
She wakes up later. My sister is born. And this is very common in this time. And this is the same time period during which women who have morning sickness are very tragically prescribed thalidomide. Which resulted in a tremendous number of birth defects. But again, looking at, you know, we're going to bring, you know, we've been, you know, as a species, we've been having babies for hundreds of thousands of years, but yet now we're going to bring all this medical practice. And, and there were, you know, some great gains. I don't want to be dismissive of this, but we've gone sort of overboard.
Okay.
Or at least that's my view.
Right. Spinal block, is that the word you're looking for?
You know,
we're going with it.
Somebody tweet Aaron the answer during our conversation, because it's embarrassing that I can't remember. So now we move forward in the 1970s, and I think, you know, things start to change. We come through the Vietnam War, we have the women's movement, and there are many discussions about reproductive issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when contraception becomes more broadly available, Roe v. Wade comes forward, so abortion becomes legal in the United States. But you start to have discussions about birth options. And in particular, you know, why is it that we always need to have birth in the hospital and have all of these medical professionals and all of this expense when we used to do it other ways? And there was a very popular book at the time, and I want to pronounce her name properly. Her name was Rahima Baldwin, wrote a book called Special Delivery, which was really sort of, I think, is looked back now as sort of the beginning of, I don't know, sort of the rebirth of the midwife.
The home birth.
Home birth approach in the United States. And so in thinking about this column, I looked up statistics today. So in 2016, though, even though I feel like, perhaps because I live in Chapel Hill and near Carrboro, that, you know, sort of midwifery is a more common type of approach. In fact, in the United States, 99% of all births, complicated or not, are still in hospitals today.
I can imagine that, because I mean, even like you think about popular culture and the way that birth and the birth process is dealt with in popular culture, there's the assumption that you go to the hospital, right?
So 99% of all births are in hospitals. A third of those, about 33%, by cesarean section. Mm-hmm. So again, they're a very, you know, significant medical intervention. And, you know, because we, again, use the hospitals and use the doctors and use the nurses and do all the tests, birth is also very expensive in the United States, like most other medical procedures in the United States, compared to Europe, compared to Canada, compared to the rest of the world. But what's really remarkable, and what makes this story interesting to me, is that the United States is one of only a handful of countries in the world with an increasing rate of maternal mortality.
Yes.
At this point in time, we get the numbers right here. About 18 out of every 100,000 women giving birth in the United States dies either during childbirth or in the aftermath due to some complication that arose during birth. That puts the United States in 33rd place.
Okay.
And the rate of maternal mortality is up by about 40% over the last 15 to 20 years.
What causes that?
And so, which I'll get to, but I just think about that.
Yeah.
You know, if you get your concept of the United States and our medical system, I mean, that just shouldn't be the case.
Right.
And
so who is it? European countries at number one? Is it Canada at number one? Is it
for the most part? I mean, your Western European countries.
Okay.
Your Sweden's, your Denmark's,
right,
your US.
Right,
but
right.
There are many other. China has a lower rate of maternal mortality than we do. Saudi Arabia has a lower rate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're 33rd. So there are a number of countries above us, and then we're declining. And so. Mm-hmm. If you go through and look at the literature, what's causing this in the United States is we have a lot of women who are coming to give birth who are in ill health.
Mm-hmm.
There's, as we've talked about in other of our sort of health segments, there's an increase in our general population of obesity, diabetes, and high blood pressure.
Right.
And those are particular risk factors if you're pregnant. And so as we have more and more mothers coming in with those conditions, there's more troubles.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's wrong. Sort of a
complications.
Complications is a better word. we have, at least until recently, had difficulty in access and prenatal care, mm-hmm. as we've tried to deal with healthcare access in the United States. And mm-hmm. so we have, again, conditions that could have been caught earlier if the women had more access to healthcare earlier in the pregnancy. Yeah. But then, as I mentioned before, you know, surgery is a risky procedure. And so if you have more and more cesarean sections, and that has been the trend here in the United States, it's leveled off a little bit in the last few years, but if you can have more and more cesarean sections,
then the risk goes up.
You're going to have more and more problems, and then sadly more and more maternal mortality, particularly if that's more than you need.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last category is infections mm-hmm. acquired either in the hospital or the doctor's office. And as I think people are aware, we have more and more trouble with hospital infections across the United States, and in particular with antibiotic resistance. So with all of those factors, I have this increase in maternal mortality, and it just...
Interesting. So what's the can we pinpoint the start of the increase? Because I mean 18 per 100,000 is still way lower than it might have been 100 years ago. So it dropped and then it started rising again.
Yeah, that's I only have data from in the early 1990s. It was more like 7 to 9.
It's
about a doubling since the early 1990s.
Wow.
And so it's a recent phenomena. Now, certainly
a pretty significant phenomenon.
You know, 100 years ago, it was much higher. Yeah. We'll talk a little bit more about that in part two next week. But it's been a very dramatic rise in the last couple of decades.
That's really staggering. I had no idea. I would have thought you'd said, well, it was 13 or 14 and now it's up to, it's doubled?
Yeah. And there is some debate in the literature about, the accuracy of the data.
Yeah.
But in any case, it's
gone up pretty significantly is the...
It's a significant problem, and it's very intertwined. Let's go just on a little bit of a tangent for the mm-hmm. moment. When I read those, in particular, the issue of diabetes, high blood pressure, mm-hmm. and obesity, we know that that's an issue across the United States, and that's showing up as a fundamental factor in this kind of very sad increase in maternal mortality. But in addition, one of the more... I don't know, sad but interesting stories I've been reading over the last 6 months that I think is sort of percolating its way up to the mass media, is we also have segments of the United States population with declining life expectancy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you'll hear more and more about this. In particular, low-income whites in the United States have had a 3 to 4 year decline in average life expectancy over the last decade.
Yeah.
Again, all tied into some of the same general public health issues we've been talking about the last year or so.
So what begins to resolve this? I know there's a part two coming, but and I'm sure that this is going to be something you'll touch on, but how do you begin to resolve this? I know, you know, you're talking about sort of long-term risk factors being associated with it, like obesity and diabetes and heart conditions, so preventative care has got to be something, access to health care, and then there's others, but what's step one?
If you go back to the last three that I listed were prenatal care, mm-hmm. An overuse of cesarean section, and then hospital-acquired infections.
Mm-hmm.
And so what inspired this column was just sort of an interesting coalescence of events. Back in December, the British National Healthcare Service put out a national policy that suggested that women with uncomplicated pregnancies should have their babies at home with midwives. And that really is what sort of really struck me. And just that same day, I happened to go to a Christmas party.
Mm-hmm.
This woman I'd known for some years, but her name is Jane Gledhill.
Okay.
She'll be joining us next week.
Next week, okay.
Jane is a certified nurse midwife. She's the nurse manager at the Women's Birth and Wellness Center, right down MLK from here.
Okay.
And she is also, I'm going to get this correct, the secretary of the Legislative Committee for the North Carolina chapter of the American College of Nurse Midwives.
Okay.
And so I'd read this story about what was happening in Britain and it's a very data-based story.
Right.
And they were very careful in making their decision. She had, you know, come across the same story recently because it's in her area of expertise.
Yeah.
So we talked. We ignored the rest of the party guests.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
Well, I'm an engineer. I only have the social skills to talk to one person.
Yeah, which puts you one up on like 75% of the engineers.
And
right?
So we had a long discussion about, you know, what happens in Britain, what's different in Britain, and what the advantages are. But then to what extent, you know, we could utilize that kind of an approach, and the approach that Jane, quite frankly, has dedicated her professional life to here in the United States to start to think about how to better optimize how we're managing these situations and how to improve outcomes and to stop being the 33rd best country in the world in terms of maternal mortality, which is...
And worsening.
Which is just a sad set of circumstances. Yeah. And so, as you know, I have... I have that lengthy discussion that she and I had that I'm in the process of culling down for part two next week, and she'll join me here and hopefully explain it far better
than I, when
we talk next week.
We'll look forward to that conversation. We've got to let you go here in a second, but you can get the column on our website, chapelboro.com. It's up right now. We'll have part two coming in 6 days. It'll be up on Sunday, and we'll look forward to that conversation next week. Before we go, though, I have to ask, since it's Iowa caucus day, and we've got Bernie Sanders, who's calling for the single-payer system. We've got Hillary Clinton, who wants to stay the course with Obamacare. We've got 137 Republicans who all want to scrap Obamacare and replace it, in air quotes, with something that I'm sure is nothing like the old system that we had 7 years ago, but as of right now, we have no details. Which is best in terms of this issue? What gets us further down that road?
Well,
which candidate do you endorse in the for all of those Iowans listening right now on the air?
I am. I mean, if you read my columns, I'm very strongly interested in public health and particularly database public health. And so, of course, you know, I mean, I think none of the Republican candidates, I think, would be addressing this issue in a positive manner or similar issues. And so on the Democratic side, it's the classic debate that they're having right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Britain has a public health care system. And as we're talking about, as soon as you're pregnant, you're assigned a midwife and you have someone who's working with you all the way through and they have tremendous outcomes. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the socialized medical system. So I think I have to agree with Senator Sanders that that's probably the best possible theoretical outcome that would address these kind of situations.
This is a question of how we get there.
But I don't know, you know, I'm sympathetic to the view of Secretary Clinton that we take what was implemented under President Obama and continue to build on that rather than make sort of a strong course correction because we've made such great progress these last 8 years.
All right.
So how was that for
hard stance?
How was
from
that,
Jeff Danner how was
that
right
for
there,
a non-answer?
Well played.
But as someone who's very interested in public health issues, you know, birth options and otherwise, I'm just really pleased to see sort of this substantive debate on the Democratic side and feeling like we can't really go wrong on either option. So there's my little political
pitch. We've got
pitch.
We've got an endorsement for 9 months from now, but maybe not for tonight. All right. Jeff Danner, Common Science, check out our website chapelboro.com to get the column for today and check back in 6 days for part two of that column. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Aaron.